Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
Very disappointing to us that all but two Democrats voted against aid to farmers and ranchers, against disaster relief, against all these bipartisan measures that had already been negotiated and decided upon. Again, the only difference on this legislation was that we would push the debt ceiling to January of 2027.
Speaker of the House of Representatives, Mike Johnson.
I want you all to remember that it was just last spring that the same Democrats berated Republicans and said that it was irresponsible to hold the debt limit, the debt ceiling, hostage. What changed? It is, I think, really irresponsible for us to risk a shutdown over these issues on things that they have already agreed upon. I think you need to be asking them the questions about that.
But what's the next step?
We will regroup this, and we will come up with another solution.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
As the 118th Congress draws to a close, it's natural to use these final days to reflect on our work.
Representative Tom Cole from Oklahoma is the chairman of the House Appropriations Committee.
Though we've accomplished much over the last 2 years, there's more to be done. First and foremost, we need to ensure that the government remains open and operating to provide needed services for Americans. It's why I stand before you. With government funding running out, it's our duty to act. When the House Appropriations Committee began our process of drafting bills for fiscal year 2025, we knew we had to work quickly to put the House in the best position possible. To that end, we successfully reported all 12 of our annual appropriations bills out of the committee and succeeded in passing 5 of them across the floor. Unfortunately, the House does not act on its own. And I'm sorry to say, whether we like it or not, our colleagues in the Senate have input in this process. To date, the Senate has yet to pass a single fiscal year 2025 appropriations bill across the floor. As time went on, it became clear that we would not conclude the FY25 process by the deadline of December 20th, meaning another extension is necessary. I know there's great frustration that a second continuing resolution is necessary, and quite frankly, I share in that feeling. But a government shutdown is never a good alternative. So today's bill funds the government through March 14th. This will allow Republicans to engage President Trump as we negotiate a final year funding bills that fulfill the mandate of the American people and our America First agenda. Further, this route ensures that there are no undue disruptions to our national security and the vital programs that our constituents rely on. Today's bill also extends out the debt limit for a further 2 years to January 20th, 2027. This will allow President-elect Trump to begin his term without needing to immediately address our national debt limit, allowing us to move forward on the many other pressing concerns of the American people. Finally, the legislation also provides much-needed relief to Americans struggling to recover from recent natural disasters. Congress must act. We need to provide the necessary disaster recovery aid for states and communities as our fellow citizens rebuild and restore. Though relief efforts are ongoing, it will be months, if not years, before life returns to normal. Additional investments necessary to provide needed assistance to our fellow Americans. Today's measure fully funds our existing relief requirements, ensuring that help and resources can get to those who desperately need them. Rural communities, particularly our farmers and ranchers, are facing a tough farm economy and the aftermath of multiple disasters, and these are prioritized in this legislation. While there's still a long road ahead for recovery efforts and rebuilding, this aid will mark a vital step forward.
The House Minority Leader is from New York, Hakeem Jeffries.
The bill that is before us today is just part of an effort to shut down the government. Unless we, as representatives of the American people, bend to the will of just a handful of millionaires and billionaires, because the provisions in this bill, particularly as it relates to suspending the debt ceiling for 2 years, are designed to bring about a massive tax cut, unpaid for wealthy donors and for wealthy corporations, for millionaires and billionaires who clearly some in this Congress are working for. And this bill is validation for it.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
If Elon and Vivek and company go find a bunch of waste and we can cut that out, and then we can use that to either bring back savings or maybe cut down on the bureaucracy or take that money and use it for additional things that would be better, say the Pentagon, okay, that's great. Maybe we'll save a little bit.
Texas Representative Chip Roy.
But if you save 30% of our discretionary budget, let's say they go and they go hack out just mountains of waste, fire bureaucrats, and a third, 33% of the discretionary budget just goes away. Poof. Well, that's about $600 billion. We're running about a $2 trillion deficit. I'm just trying to put this in perspective. I'm for that. You know why I'm for it? Fire the bureaucrats. End the weaponization. End the waste. End the people who are targeting us. Make them have to go out and get a real job. I'm for all of those things, and our country would be better off. And if we do it, we will then earn the right to deal with mandatory spending. But I've had some of my colleagues, I said today in a meeting with our colleagues when Vivek and Elon were here, and I pointed out that we got a $113 billion bill on the floor for the disaster supplemental. I'm pointing out that it's not going to be paid for. I'm pointing out it's going to continue to perpetuate waste, like a bike path in Alaska, COVID spending across the country, I think a church parking lot in Vermont. I mean, I can just go down a laundry list of things that your current FEMA emergency funding is being used for. And we're going to just throw another $40 billion at it after we've been criticizing FEMA all through the fall about how incompetent they are, how bad they are. We're going to say, you know what your reward is? Here's some more money. Keep doing your bureaucratic thing. Don't worry. Elon and Vivek will save us. Because we sure as hell aren't going to save us. That's what we do. And so my perspective is we should look in the mirror. We should do our job. Constrain that spending. Don't give it to the bureaucrats. Do our part. Find the savings. Do what we can do to make it work. But you know what my colleague said? My colleague said, well, Chip, the discretionary spending doesn't matter because of the point I said a minute ago. If you cut a third of it, you save $600 billion. You still have a $2 trillion deficit. Why? Because we've made promises for at least half a century on Medicare and Social Security and Medicaid and increasingly on veterans benefits that we can't keep up with. And Republicans go around pounding their chest on tax policy. We will cut taxes, so we'll create economic growth, and we'll bring in revenue, and we'll ignore the deficits. I'm for the tax cuts, but if you're not doing the spending cuts, you end up with $36 trillion of debt. Republicans need to look in the mirror. And if my colleagues think we're going to just waltz into a reconciliation debate in January, and it's all going to be kumbaya because K Street wants tax cuts, and because certain people think that they're going to get their bread buttered, but we're not going to focus on deficits, I would just suggest that maybe they think long and hard about the calendar that the House put out, whereby we are only here 3 days a week, 3 weeks a month. And maybe we should follow the Senate calendar, which, to its great credit, the incoming leader put out 5 days a week, every week for the first 3 months of the year. We were elected to do something different. And by goodness, we're going to do something different. We must. We have no choice. Failure is not an option.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Fourth generation farmer in Central City there area. We grow corn, soybeans, popcorn. We have a hog operation. On our cropping operation, we about maybe a third of it's organic. And so we just have our foot in a lot of different things.
Mark McCarg is president of the Nebraska Farm Bureau.
You know, it's kind of an interesting growing season. We finally had some moisture early on. We've been really struggling to be dry the last couple of years. And so we did get good moisture starting out the season. It really dried out towards the end, but we're really fortunate here in Central Nebraska to have good irrigation, and so that pulled us through. Crops ended up in our area, I would say for sure, average or above average, and so it was a good year. We need the commodities. Of course, prices are down, and so we're thankful for the bushels and the yield that we did have.
Now, Greg Lyons is a senior economist with the Farm Credit Administration.
Weather conditions in the U.S. Were slightly dry at the end of the growing season. Those conditions have alleviated. There were dry pastures either in the northern plains and in the southwest, but we have seen those dry conditions alleviate, especially in the northern plains, and we haven't seen any impacts to things such as hay prices for cattle producers. We've also seen some alleviation of transportation-related issues in the Mississippi River. Now, globally, where there were some positive signs, while major competitors were having drought conditions, those producers have had their declines offset by production elsewhere. For example, in Russia, while there have been declines in Russian wheat production expectations, we have seen increases in expectations for productions in other places like Australia or Canada that largely offset those declines. While in Brazil, those dry conditions they're experiencing in southern Brazil, they are still expected to produce more in 2024 than they did in the prior year. And in Argentina, we're still seeing strong growth in corn and soybean production. This, combined with the fact that growing conditions are generally favorable in many key export destinations, such as China, mean that the global situation for production, it doesn't show a lot of upside for U.S. producers heading into the next crop marketing year.
He talks about land values.
Real land value growth has cooled, with some leading indicators showing weakness in 2024. Across FCS districts, we find that land value growth was flat in real terms in 2024, although the CoBank district may have seen slow but positive real growth. But if we start to look in at specific regions, we see a little bit more weakness. On the right-hand side, this chart here is showing the average per-acre value of farmland broken out by soil quality class in Iowa. And we have started to see declines in farmland value specifically for low-quality land. We've also seen declines in the number of transactions happening. Both of these are indications of potential softness in land value markets, and so we will be watching closely over the next several quarters to see if these indications turn into broader declines in land values.
What are some other aspects of land values?
First is we have been paying attention to the growth in non-farm premiums. What we find is that in 2023, land that was within 10 miles of a major metro was worth about $8,000 on average, more than land that was 30 miles or more away from a major metro. These non-farm premiums tend to show significant strain during periods of general economic decline. So if we do see a softening of the U.S. market over the next year, we'll be paying close attention to these urban premiums. And second, you'll have noticed on the expense slide that while interest expense on debt does make up a small share of total expenses, that can understate the impact of interest cost increases on producers. The right-hand graph here is showing the percentage of farmland that has an associated lien. And in general, in the Corn Belt, we find that about 80% of farmland is free and clear of any debt. And what that does mean is that small increases in total sector levels of interest expenses on farm real estate debt can lead to relatively larger impacts to producers that do carry those additional costs.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Now, what's been interesting to me is that for decades, the Republican Party has lectured America about fiscal responsibility, about the debt and the deficit. It's always been phony. This bill proves it.
On the debate for a continuing resolution, Minority Leader from New York, Hakeem Jeffries.
The one thing we do know is that every time a Republican president comes into office, the one thing we can count on Republicans to do is to pass a massive tax cut for wealthy Americans and in the process stick working class Americans with the bill by raising the deficit and the debt.
Mark Alford is a representative from Missouri, member of the House Ag Committee.
Missouri has 87,000 farms. We are losing 1,000 farms in America each month. Our food security is national security, and the Democrats do not want to support our farmers because of the high inflationary costs that this administration has brought about and the low commodity prices. Farmers are going out of business. I don't understand this consolidation of farming in America and why the Democrats are in favor of that. We have got to support our farmers through this bill. We have got to support our disaster victims through this bill. And most of all, we must support America. We are not here for ourselves. We are here for those that we represent, the hardworking Americans who depend on us to set aside our differences and act with courage and responsibility. They deserve a government that works for them and not against us.
By the way, the continuing resolution passed as over 30 Republicans voted against it. Richard Neal, a Democrat from Massachusetts.
Can you imagine what the next 2 years are going to be like if every time the Congress works its will and then there's a tweet or from an individual who has no official portfolio who threatens members on the Republican side with a primary and they succumb? This institution has a separate responsibility based upon the separation of powers. Members of Congress don't serve under presidents of the United States. It's called the national principle. I'm in favor of aid to North Carolina. I'm in support of aid to the farmers in Missouri. We come to the aid of the American family at moments like this. But you walked away from your word. You walked away from an agreement. That's what we're bothered by. A simple suggestion from the president-elect that you ought to abandon that principle? And this is what this is about. This is trying to raise the debt ceiling to disguise a big tax cut that they want to offer later on. In December of 2017, the TCJA was rendered, and my friends, particularly the ones that have been here for a while, you know what I'm about to say is true. You borrowed the money for a tax cut. $2.3 trillion for a tax cut for wealthy people. And when you see the distribution tables, you know who got what. We are trying to avert a government shutdown, but we're also trying to subscribe to the basic principle as outlined earlier. We reached an agreement. It was honorable. It came to the aid of everything you've asked for. And then you walk away from it? What about your word going forward here? What about the currency that I noted a moment ago? And I want to tell you, you cannot win a government shutdown. And you won't win this one either.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
When I ran for Congress in 2018, the debt was $21 trillion.
Texas Representative Chip Roy.
I was just texting with my son back home in Austin, who I haven't seen in quite a long time because I'm here trying to fight for him. When I got through cancer about 12 years ago, I made my promise to my kids that I would do everything I can to save this country. And what we're doing right now is to continue to double down on the things that are destroying the republic. We are going to increase the debt ceiling, not just $4 trillion, that's false. We have spent $4.7 trillion in additional debt in the last 19 months. We're going to increase the debt by $5 trillion. That's what's going to happen right here by Republicans, increasing the debt $5 trillion. And what are you doing in the same bill? $110 billion unpaid for. Because you never have any ounce of self-respect to go out and campaign saying you're going to balance the budget, and then you come in here and pass $110 billion unpaid for. On top of the $200 billion you did for WEP, you guys won't agree with that, but the fact of the matter is $330 billion, congratulations, you've added to the debt since you were given the majority again on November 5th. It's embarrassing. It's shameful. Yes, I think this bill is better than it was yesterday on certain respects, but to take this bill yesterday and congratulate yourself because it's shorter in pages but increases the debt by $5 trillion is asinine. And that's precisely what Republicans are doing. I am absolutely sickened by a party that campaigns on fiscal responsibility and has the temerity to go forward to the American people and say, you think this is fiscally responsible. It is absolutely ridiculous. It also turns off PAYGO. It turns off the $1.7 trillion in automatic cuts under PAYGO. Because this side of the aisle is profoundly unserious about actually reducing deficits, just as my colleagues on the other side of the aisle are profoundly unserious about reducing deficits. The entire body has been racking up debt for my entire life. $36 trillion, $1 trillion of interest. We rack up $1 trillion every 100 days. And what are we going to do about it? We're going to run around and talk about cutting taxes, but not doing what's necessary to cut the spending along with the cut taxes. My other side of the aisle, my colleagues will say, oh no, we got to increase taxes, but we'll do anything to cut spending. And so here we sit in the same mess. And I got to be honest, I want to remind people, this is Article 1.
Roy, a Republican, and Jared Moskowitz, a Democrat from Florida.
Let's talk about the last 2 years. It was the Democrats who raised the debt ceiling, not the Republicans last time. Many of you voted against it. It was the Democrats who kept over the government, not once, not twice, but every single time we needed to keep the government open, it was the Democrats who kept the government open. More of us voted for it than you. And all I've heard for the last couple of weeks about it, this giant mandate, landslide, trifecta, put on your big boy pants, pass your own bill. We're only here because you guys can't agree amongst yourselves. So hold on a second. Democrats will keep government open for the American people. We will mediate the disagreements between that side of the room and that side of the room. We will do that for you. But you got to at least invite us to that meeting. So if you want us to solve your problem because you can't agree amongst yourselves, reach out.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Well, that's a tough question for me to answer.
How will he and USDA be remembered? The second longest serving Secretary of Agriculture, Tom Vilsack.
The reason it's tough is because of the incredible work that's been done at USDA by the folks who live, work, and raise their families in rural communities and are part of the USDA family. A lot of hardworking folks. And the portfolio and the mission of USDA is so diverse, and so much is going on in these mission areas that it's kind of hard to pick one or two. But what I would like, and I would hope people would understand, is that I have been deeply concerned about the welfare of farmers and ranchers, and particularly those small and mid-sized operations that really do need a different strategy to help them. It isn't just about subsidies. It isn't just about emergency assistance. It's really about a long-term commitment to more income streams for those farming operations so that they can be entrepreneurial. I don't believe in, nor do I espouse the notion that the only option for folks in farming is to get big or get out. We've lost too many farms, Tony, in my professional lifetime. We've lost almost 544,000 farms since 1981, since I started representing farmers in the farm crisis of the 1980s as a small-town lawyer. I've always been advocating for and representing and concerned about those farmers who are on the edge and those communities, those rural communities that are dependent on a strong farm economy, not just for a handful of farming operations, but for all the farming operations, so that at the end of the day, farmers can say to their sons and daughters and their grandkids, you can stay here. You can be part of this operation. You can continue generation after generation because we have revenue streams and income coming in that allows us to support multiple families. That's really what we've been working on. I would hope that as well, people recognize the amazing work that's been done, particularly in the last 4 years, in terms of nutrition and food security. Significant investments have been made in a more robust commitment to better nutrition. And I think we see this with a summer feeding program for children, covering the kids who are free and reduced lunch at school, giving them resources during the summer, their families, to be able to buy more groceries. Research-based program that we know works to provide healthier outcomes for kids. The WIC program, more fruits and vegetables. That's obviously not just good for the families, but also good for those fruit and vegetable growers. And an opportunity to see the SNAP program be reevaluated and modernized so that the benefit actually accrues based on what people are actually buying in the grocery store and the cost of that. Resulting in a slight increase in the SNAP benefit. So all that has been done. The school meal rule, more nutritious meals. So I hope people see that. And I'm very proud of the work we've done in the Forest Service. We've invested in a wildfire crisis strategy that's over time, I think, will reduce the catastrophic wildfires that we've seen all too frequently and the tremendous cost of those fires in terms of loss of life and in loss of property and loss of tremendous natural resource. We have a great gift with those our Forest Service, our National Forests. They're a wonderful gift. We need to make sure we preserve them and take care of them. So a lot to be proud of, Tony, a lot to be proud of.
The 30th and 32nd Secretary of Ag, Tom Vilsack. It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Just the way it was done. Not going through a rule, not letting us vote individually. And guess what was hidden in there? And I'm still livid about this. Pay raises for us.
South Carolina Republican Representative Ralph Norman.
How does that square? What return on investment have we given the people of America other than $37 trillion in debt? It makes no sense. And have no pay force? How does that work? No family or business would do that. And no family or business, as has been mentioned, how do you read? A speed reader can't read 1,547 pages in less than 24 hours. It's insanity. Now, the next question is, what are you going to do? Friday at 12 o'clock, the budget. I mean, that's when the shutdown. Well, look, it is what it is, and we got to face it. But rather than saddle each one of you young people with more and more debt, it's insanity, and it flies in the face of the Doge Commission.